This is the Curzon Man Them C Mac, yeah, featuring little fucking Kev, yeah. Over there in that corner, it's our boy Ginger Joe, yeah. We don't fuck about. Kick it, Kev.
Oh, it's scary.
And it's episode 9 of the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Yes, it is.
We took a little week off, but we're back now.
We had a Josh and Issa moment.
But and never we're back. Fear. Yeah, yep. We're back with an extra person now, so it's worth the wait.
So who is the extra person?
Introduce yourself.
It's me.
I'm me.
Who are you?
I'm Jordan's sister, and I'm visiting her from the cold Canadian north.
And yay. Do you have a name?
Oh yeah, Jessica.
Welcome, Jessica.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you hold your own against bitchy, vegan, angry assholes?
No, I could never hold my own against Jordan before.
Oh.
But maybe she's mellowed out now that she's a San Franciscan.
Do you notice anything different about Jordan now that she's lived in California for a while?
Yes.
Actually, I thought it was very uncharacteristic today when you were like, maybe I'm just angry at Mike, but it's my own fault. I was like, I've never heard that before.
Jordan taking the blame for something.
Well, it was kind of true. I'm not always that nice when I have PMS, and it's a sad fact, I guess. So evidently, yes, either old age or San Francisco has mellowed me out.
Nice.
I'm just a husk of my former self.
It could be all the muscle relaxants that I slip into your drinks.
It could be. It could be. Along with all the Quaaludes that Mike slips into everything as well.
Yeah, and all that them hits off Frankenbong that you've been
Right. And maybe just all the booze.
How is Frankenbong? I haven't seen him in so long. I miss him.
I think Frankenbong is pretty much still safe in his old place.
Good.
In the kitchen cupboard.
There will always be a place for Frankenbong.
Yeah,
In your home and in my heart.
It's true. I can only imagine, though, if Mike and I split up, the nasty custody battle that will ensue over Frankenbong.
It'll make Kramer versus Kramer look like a Sunday afternoon in the park.
That's right.
I'm unfamiliar with the Frankenbong.
We'll catch up.
Yeah, sorry. I'm assuming you listen to this program.
I'm on episode 6.
Fool.
So, I don't know if you had anything in mind to talk about.
Well, I did, but what have you got in mind?
Well, I've got a continuation of our ongoing series, Shit Talking on PETA.
Oh, okay, yes, let's hear it.
Ingrid Newkirk's unique will.
So, oh, boy.
I had already heard about this, actually, but I hadn't actually seen the actual will. So the one component of Ingrid Newkirk's final wishes that I was previously familiar with was her desire to be butchered and barbecued in a public demonstration, which, you know, I can kind of admire her zazz. You know, it's not something I would do, but I can you know, kind of admire the full-out, balls-out kind of craziness that takes. But there was a lot of other components in here that I was reading about that really struck me as hilarious and insane.
I can't really imagine that part of her will would actually be enforceable, given that it's illegal to eat other people.
Is it?
Oh, no, she wouldn't be eat. That's news to me. She wouldn't be eaten. I think she would just be barbecued.
Oh.
And I think the, I have to admit, I like the image of somebody, like, smelling some cooking meat and being like, oh, that smells great, I want to get me some of that, and then realizing that it's
Ingrid
human.
Newkirk.
Yeah, Ingrid Newkirk. I kind of relish the, no pun intended, the idea of that. But yeah, knowing that her petards will actually carry that out is kind of terrifying.
Oh, dear.
So here are some of her suggestions. La la la. The meat of my body be used for a human barbecue to remind the world that the meat of a corpse is all flesh, regardless of whether it comes from a human being or another animal. and that flesh foods are not needed. So yeah, that's the part I knew about. That my skin, or a portion thereof, be removed and be made into leather products, such as purses, to remind the world that human skin and the skin of other animals is the same, and that neither is fabric nor needed. And that some skin be tacked up outside the Indian leather fair each year.
Very culturally sensitive.
Yeah. That in remembrance of the elephant foot umbrella stands and tiger rugs I saw as a child, offered for sale by merchants at the Connaught Place in Delhi, my feet be removed and umbrella stands or other ornamentation be made from them. That one of my eyes be removed. This is where it starts to get really crazy.
Oh, boy.
One of my eyes be removed, mounted, and delivered to the administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as a reminder that PETA will continue to be watching the agency until it stops poisoning and torturing animals in useless and cruel experiments.
See, now I wonder if Ingrid Newkirk could be prosecuted under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act for that. You know, I kind of feel like she could be.
Well, what a fucking psycho, like, stalker ex-girlfriend thing to do to somebody. Like,
amen.
I'm gonna send you my eye after I'm dead so that you know I'm always watching over you. And I like the little addendum at the end of that paragraph. And the other eye is to be used as PETA sees fit.
Now, what kind of use do you think PETA would have for one orphaned human eyeball? Who do you think they would send that one to?
You know, knowing them, they'd figure some way to stick it up a woman's vagina and have her shoot it out like a ping pong ball and make some kind of animal rights statement out of that. They will convolute an animal rights statement out of that act somehow.
They could cut it in half and have it used as pasty.
Exactly.
For someone who's going to strip for animals.
Totally.
I'd rather wear Ingrid Newkirk's eyeballs than
Oh, God. I like that. I like that campaign.
Oh, I'm going to get Mike to draw that.
I'd rather wear Ingrid Newkirk's eyeballs as pasties than wear for...
Exactly.
It's not quite as catchy as the naked thing, but it really packs a bigger punch.
The visual is
better.
Yeah,
the visual is really where it's at there.
Oh, dear.
And getting crazier. My pointing finger be delivered to Kenneth Feld, owner of Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, or to his circus museum to stand as the greatest accusation on earth on behalf of the countless elephants, lions, tigers, bears, and other animals who have been kidnapped from their families, blah, 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 blah. So again, you know, really good sentiment, but, you know, delivering a pointing finger cut off a dead person is a little extreme.
This is insane. I can't wait until Tim Burton and Danny Elfman get their hands on this and make it into a movie.
Yeah. That my liver be vacuum-packed and shipped in whole or in part to France to there be used in a public appeal to persuade shoppers not to support the vile practice of force-feeding geese and ducks for foie gras.
Because Ingrid Newkirk herself has been brutally force-fed
These
past 60-odd years that she's been alive.
All right, this one's for you, too. One of my ears be removed, mounted, and sent to the Canadian Parliament to assist them in hearing. Hearing, for the first time, perhaps, the screams of the seals, bears, raccoons, foxes, and minks bludgeoned, trapped, and sometimes skinned alive for their pelts. That the other ear be removed, preserved, and displayed outside the Deonar Abattoir in Mumbai. Yes. I don't think they're gonna display it. Call me crazy, but...
I think Ingrid Newkirk really doesn't want to come back as a zombie.
Yeah, she's making sure of that.
Yeah. God.
It's kind of, in a way, it's kind of like the beatification of herself, you know, where people are like, oh, I have Pope John I's fingertip in my chapel. You know, it's like she wants her little relics to be, like, worshipped by animal rights activists around the world.
I mean, really, this is a colossal testament to her ego, much more than it's a testament to her commitment to animals.
We have Ingrid Newkirk's liver to worship.
Well, can you imagine, you know, like, some crazy PETA Frenchman standing on the corner with Ingrid Newkirk's liver in a vacuum-packed bag holding it up? No foie gras! I bet that would be really effective.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you know.
And people would see the liver and know that it was hers.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, people would really all these random French people are going to be walking by, like, Kie Ingrid Newkirk.
Wait, is that Ingrid Newkirk's liver?
Holy fucking shit.
I thought that was just some random person.
Yeah, this one's my favorite. That one of my thumbs be removed, mounted upwards on a plaque, and sent to the person or institution that, in the year of my death or thereabouts, PETA decides has done the most to promote alternatives to the use and abuse of animals in any area of their exploitation. So that is your reward. That's a reward.
You get Ingrid Newkirk's thumb.
Severed thumb is a reward.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going to start working now so that I can reap that reward.
I don't know that, you know, Ingrid, I don't think that's something that you know, that's good for the animals. I think, if anything, it's going to discourage work for the animals. Well, that's nobody wants your severed thumb.
Plus, that's totally not vegan. Human thumb?
Totally. It's not
vegan. So basically, she's just catering to the whole ink, not mink, but I still eat meat crowd.
Totally.
Yeah. So Tommy Lee can have it.
Yeah. Send it to Tommy. And then the other thumb gets mounted in a downward position.
Right. Carrot and stick.
Yes. And here's the baffling part, right after the most crazy part. That a little part of my heart be buried near the racetrack at Hockenheim, preferably near the Ferrari pits, where Michael Schumacher raced in and won the German Grand Prix.
What?
Yeah. It's like, and here's your little hint that I'm not, you know, 100% 24/7 animal rights person.
She's
I'm a little bit of a race car, NASCAR freak as well.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Fossil fuel is totally not vegan, Ingrid.
Do you think that do you think maybe her and Michael Schumacher, like, had this, you know, fling?
Whoa, maybe.
And now, and she's just like, you will always have a piece of my heart.
And then literally. She runs out of symbolic body parts.
Yeah, she runs out of symbolic body parts. No word on where her labia are taken. Yeah, for someone who spends so much time objectifying other women, I'm surprised she makes no mention of how her tatas shall be used.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. She should have said, my breasts
shall be mounted on a plaque.
And then she
can make dollar jokes. Admission charge for men to feel them, and all those donations shall go to preserving animal rights.
Well, she could have symbolically spoken about the animals getting fucked or something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear.
That my breasts be removed and mounted on a plaque and have plumbing inserted into them so that they lactate soy milk at all times of the day to feed the homeless.
No,
that's what I would do, Ingrid. You've been trumped.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't even know if this counts as talking shit on PETA, because frankly, it sort of seems like Ingrid Newkirk talking shit on herself.
Yeah, it's just kind of self-explanatory.
There it is. Yeah, so, seriously, what, PETA, what the fuck?
I'm working towards the thummy award. The thummies. I think, you know, why make this a one-time thing? You know, I think every animal rights activist out there should put in their wills that their severed thumbs should be given to, you know, the best and worst of the animal rights world.
Yeah.
Every year.
Oh, man.
We could have hundreds of thumbs every year. Do you know how many animal rights activists die from malnutrition?
I can't wait to see what Gary Francione's will says. Because that guy is crazy.
I think that should be our little homework assignment. Maybe next episode we can read our will and testament.
Okay. I'm bowled over. I don't even know. I just have to reiterate my previous statement about how this just seems like such a colossal testament to her own arrogance. Yeah. I just, like, would you ever think that by cutting up your body that you would be able to affect even the tiniest bit of international change on, like, animal treatment? I mean, like,
animal treatment? No. There are other things, maybe.
Maybe. I mean,
like cannibalism, you know?
Maybe.
People be like, this human meat is excellent.
Yeah.
Why has this been taboo for so many years?
Yeah, I think that actually I would if it was consensually given meat, then maybe by a person who died of natural causes, then maybe they're working against themselves, because I'm kind of like, I'd try that.
No, I have to say, I was tempted a few days ago, because you could see I have this nasty cut on my finger. Mm, yeah. So I was slicing tomatoes, and I cut off a little chunk of my finger.
Oh.
And it was a very small chunk, but I remember it reminded me of several years ago when I cut off a larger chunk of another finger with a hatchet when I was trying to make kindling. And it was, you know, it was a sizably larger chunk. Like, I would have actually tasted it if I'd eaten it. And I considered, I was like, this is probably my only chance to consensually eat human flesh. And because it's my own, I technically wouldn't be hurting anybody.
But it's gay.
You know, I know I'm alive. I might as well replenish what I've lost. And I did think about it for a while, but I ended up not doing it. But I, you know, I think if I ever cut off a hunk of myself, I will give it serious thought again.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's vegan to eat parts of your own body that have fallen off?
Well,
either no. From leprosy or other causes?
No, because, you know, this is, if we're going to, I'm just going to talk shit a little bit more about dumb people now. So I'm just going to take the talking shit section from PETA and Ingrid Newkirk to just dumb people generally.
Well, I think PETA and Ingrid Newkirk is a synonym for stupid people.
Yeah, so, well, they're sort of a subset. Yeah. Like, this is, I'm sure there are many people like this within the organization, but there are many without, too. And that is the people who totally can't understand the difference between vegan and ethical. So
yeah.
It wouldn't be vegan because it's an animal product, because... Mm-hmm. Lord knows, Erica, you're an animal. And so it wouldn't be vegan, but ethical. Yes, I think it would probably be ethical, but gross. Woo-hoo! It would still be kind of gross.
Oh, gross doesn't bother me.
And gay, like Jessica said.
Gross and gay doesn't
right,
bother me.
Right,
gross yeah. And gay to death, baby. That's my next tattoo. Gross and gay to
death. Well, you get like a giant.
Day I die.
Well, you get a giant like chest piece. It says yeah. That. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, like two banners, like over one over each boob. So you one's should... like gross. That, I'll just name my boobs gross and gay.
That's perfect.
Nice.
I love it. Yeah, so.
Awesome.
Whatever. If you can't tell the difference between what's vegan and what's ethical, shame on
yeah.
You.
Eat an ass.
Yeah. Which is perhaps ethical, but not vegan.
Consensually
it's ethical
ass.
If you eat your own ass.
Yeah, or if you get the consent of, yes. Of the person whose
and
ass it is.
There was that real guy who had the weird fetish. Did you hear about this? And he wanted to get somebody else to come, and they would cut off his penis and cook it, and he wanted the other person to eat it.
That
oh,
was in
yeah.
Germany, right?
Yeah.
Those crazy those, Germans.
Those krauts.
So that guy got there first.
Did he do it?
I think he did do it, but
oh
I don't know.
Oh my god. Do you think it was worth it?
I doubt it.
I could see doing that if, like, you wanted a sex change operation, and you're like, well, it's coming off anyway.
But
I might as well do something really, you know.
But they don't cut it off, actually. They invert it.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
So that guy's screwed.
So yeah, he is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe he just wanted to be a eunuch.
Maybe. But then what'd they do with his balls?
They, well, you know the saying, meat and two veg. They were the veg on the side.
Oh, yuck. That's like prairie oysters, but from Germany.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, I think, let me get my little $12 magazine here. There was a...
$12 magazine?
It's from England.
What kind of crazy...
Special. It's fun. It's all about, like, crazy, like, you know, lizard people smoking pipes. And, you know.
No, it's Darwin.
Just this, yeah, it's just this crazy, silly magazine.
Oh my god, with a disgusting picture.
Yeah. This is a baby that had, it had a parasitic twin living in its brain. That little baby foot is inside a brain.
That is awful.
And they have this whole thing about polydactylism right after we were talking about that six-toed baby that was born in San Francisco.
Oh my god. I want to, you know, we need to look for an update on that six-toed baby.
We should.
Because, yes, there was a six-toed baby. You
I
heard about
I
it.
I listened to that.
Where's the thing? Here it is. This is a little small article. Serbian chef... Lubomir Irovich, 45, has published an ebook, The Testicle Cookbook, Cooking with Balls, on the Udo website. Dishes include testicle pizza and battered testicles and barbecued testicles and giblets. The balls come from stallions, ostriches, bulls, pigs, and turkeys. Balls are a traditional delicacy in Serbia regarded as an aphrodisiac.
Well, I think Mike, the Serbian, will be very surprised to hear about that.
I think that complements nicely the all-penis restaurant in China.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Have you heard about that?
No.
So, if you were a lesbian and you went and ate at that restaurant, would
if
you...
If I hypothetically were.
Would you lose your lesbian cred?
I don't know.
Would you have your license revoked?
Yeah, they might take away my card. But... No, I have nothing to say about that.
No comment. No comment. I did not eat at the penis restaurant.
Seems a little different.
I would really like it if their slogan was, "Go eat a dick."
Yeah, no, you can't give it any sexual connotation, or else it's like weird bestiality.
Where cock munchers come related. To me, eat and greet.
They could have like, you know, the like sit down restaurant, and then the like to go express counter.
Dick Express
on a stick.
Fast dick. They could call it Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am.
Yes, that is it. Perfect.
The quickie stand. Oh, I could make dick jokes all day.
Now I really want to open up a vegan like sausage restaurant and call it Wham Bam Thank You Ma'am.
That's why people don't want to go vegan, is because they can't get vegan penis.
That's true.
That's what we need to do.
Clearly.
Forget Julie Hassan's like sausages. We need to start like working now to come
up
with
fuck vegan meringue. Yeah. The most important
marshmallows, forget it. Dandies, you're about to lose your product of the year award.
Yeah. It's all about making that tofu dick.
Right.
Man, there's so many don't even get me started.
Well, did you, in
the
a related...
Pulse smoker. All the different menu items would have different crude names, like the pulse smoker platter.
In a related note, do you remember hearing about that book that someone self-published on that Lulu website? And it's called, oh shit.
Self-published books are my favorite.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It's called something like Plentiful Harvest or something, but it's a semen cookbook.
Oh.
and the picture on the front is like this kind of like
what he
custard,
had no buyers
molded
for
custard.
That?
Yeah, shocked. I know. Yes, there are a number of people on the PBK who are very interested in that book and who were hotly debating the veganness of it.
So, should we reiterate?
Not vegan.
Not vegan.
Ethical, like
possibly ethical.
Unless, yeah, if you've like enslaved a harem of men to constantly be producing
actually,
for you.
I have a really gross story, now that you reminded me.
Okay, good. This is the gross episode.
Yes. It's all about jizz and balls and dicks. She was somebody my mother knew. She has, like, OCD or something, I think, stemming from some childhood trauma. So she's, like, one of those people that never throws anything away. You know, her car trunk is full of shit. She, like, categorizes and archives everything. And, apparently, I don't know how my mom found this out, but apparently she has, like, a drawer in her home filled with Ziploc baggies, and each baggie has a different man's semen in it, and she's, like, dated them and, like, written the man's name. Like, I don't know why she does this.
And how does she get it?
I guess she, like, you know, gives him a hand job and then, like, you know, wipes it in the bag or, like, puts the tissue in the bag. I don't know if the guys are made aware of her little collection, but it's like a mental illness she's got. Like, she has to have the semen of every man she's ever been intimate with, like, in a file.
So how many bags?
I don't know. That's a good question. But, you know, I mean, she's, like, you know, in her 50s or maybe even her 60s by now. So it's got to be, you know, a good collection.
Hmm. Man, I really wish I'd done that now. Now that I'm married and
yeah, now that you've
rapidly
got one baggie for the rest of your life.
Damn.
I'm a one baggie woman now.
Oh my god.
Isn't that's disturbing, isn't it?
Yeah, so
but what would you do, right, if you were like a guy? And you know, you met this girl, you really like her, you know, you think you might go out on a couple dates, and then, you know, like, you're, I don't know, say you're looking for a battery or something, or a flashlight, the lights go out in her house, and, like, you find this drawer full of, you know, jizz bags.
Doesn't that stuff go, like, moldy? I mean...
I'm sure it would.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe she just, like...
indefinitely.
Well, maybe she's, you know, developed a technique for preserving it, or
God, maybe she's making cheese.
Oh. Well, I think, you know, I don't think, it's not like she opens it up and, like, plays around with it. It's like, she just seals it, and it's there in the baggie forever. So it's not like it's exposed to oxygen or anything, but still a gross thing to do.
Yes. Yes.
There was that weird McSweeney story, but I can't remember who it was by, about the woman who sits by the beach and watches all the young lifeguards have sex with their girlfriends, and then they throw the condoms to the side, and then she runs out and grabs the condoms and sucks the semen into a syringe and injects herself in her car because she wants to have the baby of these young, beautiful lifeguards. And then there was something about a car crash, I don't know.
Something.
Well, it's nice to know that I have options if Mike decides that he doesn't want kids.
There you go.
Yeah, now you live by the beach.
I do.
Well, relatively speaking.
Yes, I can go to the beach.
Yes. See all those hunky lifeguards.
Yeah. That's clearly my type, the hunky lifeguard.
Awesome.
So, can anybody else think of anything gross to talk about? What's disgusting today?
Well, I did have one other thing on my list, but it's not gross. And it would actually be really insensitive to call it gross because it's about cancer.
Okay, well, why don't we make a complete shift from gross and talk about
cancer?
Not gross at all.
Well, I wanted to talk about, have you heard about this Jade Goody person in the UK? This, like, celebrity star?
Yes.
Like, reality
kind of... the now deceased.
Yes.
Yes.
So... like, I've kind of heard of her in the past. I remember, like, I vaguely remember her getting big on Big Brother, because that was when I lived in Hong Kong, so we got more, like, British media there than we do here.
Right.
So, like, you know, I was kind of familiar with her, but I don't know, like, there was something that kind of bugged me about her decision to be like, I want to die in the public eye, and, you know, I don't want to seem insensitive, like... ew, cancer is gross, and you shouldn't be showing it, but at the same time, it was like, I was really... there was something that kind of bothered me about her, like, her whole decision, her, like, crusade to make her death and her illness very public. And I realized that it was because it was almost like it was, well, it was very much about her. It wasn't about cancer awareness or bringing, you know, dignity to dying at a young age or dying from cancer. It was about, like, let's see how much publicity I can squeeze out of this until I'm dead. And it was like... I know it seems like a really mean thing to say, but, you know, I, like, looked at some of the, like, there was this one picture that really kind of, like, solidified my feelings about it, which is, you know, she lost all of her hair due to chemo, and, you know, she had this, you know, really sweet wedding to her boyfriend, where she's, like, wearing her big white wedding dress, and she had this big, you know, like, affair in a church, and she had her bald head, and, you know, that was really sweet. But the thing, I realized what it was, is there's this picture of her where she's, like, bald, but she's, like, perfectly made up. Like, eyebrows, lips, you know, eyeliner, and it's almost like, you know, she's got this very, like, weary, you know, I mean, obviously she's dying, she's got this very, you know, kind of, like, half-awake expression on her face, but the way she's made up to look, it's like this, you know, this dewy, like, oh, I just woke up, I've got sultry, half-open eyes kind of thing, and it was like this, like... fetishization of cancer, you know, it's kind of like a, like the Lifetime channel
treatment
of cancer, where it's like, oh, I'm dying, and it's so dramatic, you know, it's very much like, you know, where she's like bald, and yet she's perfectly made up and beautiful, and it's like, dude, I've seen people dying of cancer, it's not beautiful, they're not wearing makeup, their skin turns yellow, and they're like gasping for breath, and it's not pretty, you know, and it's like, it just seemed like, I don't know how to describe it, but it seemed grotesque, and it seemed to me like it wasn't, it seemed to me like it didn't come from a place of wanting to increase awareness about her type of cancer so much as it came from a place of self-promotion, which strikes me as really sad that that was her first instinct when she learned that she had months to live, was I want to live the rest of my life in the public spotlight.
Yeah, I read it. I didn't know who she was because I had never really watched Big Brother or anything like that.
Who does? God.
Well, you evidently.
No, it's boring.
But I actually learned about her only quite recently through an article on the Huffington Post. And I mean, the whole thing is just kind of sick, and I don't want to speak ill of the dead or whatever, but she was, what, 23? She was,
27.
Okay, she was young. She was younger than you and I. And older than you.
What? Oh, 27, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I kind of was of two minds. Like, on the one hand, I thought, well, she's young, and she just found out that she's going to die, so I guess she's kind of entitled to have maybe kind of a strange reaction to that news. But and in the one article that I read, the first article that I read that it kind of introduced me to the whole story, she said, you know, oh, well, I want to have this, you know, I want to have all this media and everything because I want to try and make as much money off of my story as I possibly can for my kids. And, you know, I can kind of understand that. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, there was no, like, let's increase research and funding for this kind of cancer. There was no, like, let's try and not make it so that people don't have to go on insane reality TV media blitzes if they're dying of cancer in order to, like, pay for their families. And the whole, like, wedding thing, I mean, it was sweet that she finally got to get married and everything, but, I mean, it was also kind of sick because that, you know, marriage is till death do you part, sure, but I'm not too sure what, I don't know.
It's a little different if you take the vow knowing that till death do you part is like 2 months away.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah.
As the case may be. Because didn't she die like a week or so after
the
wedding?
Yeah, I think so, actually.
Like very, very soon afterwards. So, I don't know. I don't want to begrudge this poor woman her...
Yeah, I mean, she's dead after all.
She's dead and whatever, but I think it's more an indicator that our society is really a bunch of sick motherfuckers that we pay that much attention. You know, like, we're not saying, like, I doubt very much that donations to cancer charities and stuff went up dramatically in the wake of this kind of coverage. It just seems like it's more like a morbid kind of, like, it's like frying an ant with your magnifying glass or something and watching it, like, burn to death slowly. It's just kind of this morbid curiosity that I don't think is one of the better traits of humans.
Yeah. It was, I think it was just, like, an extension of reality TV that, like, just went too far. It's like the next big frontier is, you know,
dying.
Like, dying live on television. But the whole thing reminds me of there was this animated show on British TV called Monkey Dust, and they did this hilarious parody of British reality TV, because, like, I mean, here in America, we love our reality TV. I mean, people get so into these ridiculous shows like American Idol and The Biggest Loser and America's Next Top Model, but in, like, I think much more so in Britain, they, like, idolize these total, like, normal people who go on TV for, like, one season, and all of a sudden they're, like, huge celebrities. And that's exactly who Jade Goody was. She was just this nobody that was on this reality show, and suddenly she was, like, going to all these clubs and stuff for nothing, you know? But, I was talking about Monkey Dust, but it was this great parody of the British obsession with, like, you know, reality TV and the people who become famous through it, and it was this show called, it was like BBC's People on the Toilet, and it was just like 24-hour coverage of different people, like, on a toilet. And, like, the one woman, Elaine, from BBC's People on the Toilet became this huge celebrity, and she was, like, presenting Nobel Peace Prizes and stuff, and, you know, like, you know, she was sitting on, like, panels discussing Middle Eastern peace talks and stuff. It was, like, the greatest parody of you know, British obsession with reality TV stars.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, and, the thing that comes closest to people on the toilet in reality is, you know, people on their deathbed.
Right.
It's just kind of weird.
Right.
It brings it back to the gross theme.
Yes.
Yes, it does. And actually, continuing in the gross theme, we watched some reality TV this past
week.
Yeah,
I was just thinking of that.
And I am going to make a disclaimer here because I think that if I don't, then I will get hate mail. This is not a fat hate article. I am not a fat hater, and I believe in health and beauty at every size within very thin margins of reason.
That said, Jordan is wearing a No Fat Chicks t-shirt.
That's true, but only because it's laundry day.
Okay.
So we were watching The Learning Channel, which has had kind of a staggering decline in about the last 5 or 7 years.
Really?
I learned a lot about the depravity of human beings.
Yes, I mean, it's kind of gone from being an educational, or at least semi-educational, station to now being basically huge family porn.
Yeah.
And
a freak show.
And like, yeah, freak shows. And that's essentially what this thing that we saw was. It was called The World's Heaviest Man Gets Married. And it was about...
Oh, I think I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it's about a man in Mexico who's the world's heaviest man. His top weight was something like 1,200 or 1,300 pounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He became that way, I guess, by eating junk food.
Yeah.
He didn't have an illness or anything like that. He was kind of a chunky kid, and apparently his eating habits just developed along the lines of being very, very heavy on the junk food. And
1,200. I mean, yeah. Don't you like die once you get past 1,000?
Well, this guy is still very much alive, but wow. So he basically ate himself into, you know, obesity. And then once he was, I think, around 400 odd pounds, he began to develop health problems, like these kind of edema things on his legs, and he was essentially bedridden, and continued to gain weight and was very depressed. And then some Mexican news station did a piece on him, and lots of people found out about him and donated money to try and help him, you know, start losing his weight and have treatment and have like a special bed made for him and everything. And he lost something like 300, 400 pounds. So he got down to like 800 or 900 pounds.
And it was all televised as well.
Yeah. And this was all televised. And so, and during that
just
period,
that phrase alone, he got down to 800 or 900 pounds.
I know.
Through hard work and exercise and diet, he got down to 800 pounds.
Yes. And he, and during this time he met a woman who I think was his nurse or something like that. She was one of his aides, I believe. And they fell in love, and then they were getting married. So the whole show was about him preparing for his wedding and, like, getting, you know, a wedding shirt made. I believe that he spent, like, most of his life naked because he was on the bed he didn't have stuff to wear. And he basically just was draped in sheets. And most of the footage of him was, like, you know, from the waist up, but not, you know, shirtless.
But they could show his entire body because all his parts were hidden beneath his skin.
And it was just really kind of grotesque. And he seemed like a nice human being and everything. But, I mean, it was staggering to watch this guy because he was just talking about, you know, like he was trying to make everything seem very normal and to make his condition just kind of, he really tried hard to make his condition seem like it was, you know, this disease and like this, this thing that, you know, was beyond his control and everything else, which, you know, to a degree, you know, some people put on weight more easily than others. Some people, you know, they battle with depression and that's hard. And, I'm certainly not innocent of never depression eating or whatever. But the thing that was really, really shocking about this guy was everybody around him that were like the biggest enablers in the entire world. Like his mother, it showed the shot of his mother, like happily taking away his bucket that he'd pissed in. And it showed his fiance, like bringing over the wash basin so he could like wash himself off in the bed.
Yeah, they did a sponge bath.
And then it showed his mother talking about how he cheats on his diet, and which seems, you know, sort of understandable. I'm sure lots of people cheat on their diets until you realize that this guy can't get out of bed. So if he's cheating on his diet, it's because somebody is bringing him cheating food.
True.
And Oh my god. And so the sad thing about this, I'm really coming across like a fat hater, and I really don't mean that. But I guess another extremely obese man heard about this guy. But they were also in Mexico. They didn't actually live that far apart. And this other guy was, you know, 1,000-odd pounds.
Jeez.
As well, and bedridden and severely depressed.
So at this point, he was actually the world's heaviest man.
Yes, yes. At this point, this was when
the baton had been passed.
Yeah, essentially. So this other heaviest man now wrote to the first guy, and asking him for help. And he said, you know, I'm really depressed, and
man.
And I just, you know, I'm like trapped in this body and everything, and you know, help me. And so the protagonist of this reality show decides that he's going to help him. And what does he do to help him? He decides to build him a new bed so that he can continue to lie around. There's no, like, let's talk, you know, like, let's commiserate about, you know, how this...
Let's share this, diet tips.
Yeah, so, like, no, like, let's try and come up with good, effective workout plans for, yeah. you know, people of our size, or, you know, let's give emotional support. It's just like, let me enable you some
yeah.
more. And that was kind of the disgusting thing about the whole show, wasn't that, you know, I mean, like, this guy, it was... His body was pretty grotesque. When you get to be 1,200 pounds, your body yeah. really loses a lot of its human shape.
But he was amazingly flexible.
Yeah, well, I think his legs, like, could not
bones had turned to jelly.
Like, I think his joints had just been forced open because there was so much mass. But the really disgusting thing about this was just, it was the media attention and the yeah. way that the show was made, where it was just, like, making this guy who... you know, had kind of a bad run and must have been at least a little bit genetically disposed
sure.
towards being a heavy guy, but also, you know, really tragically let his health get away from him.
Uh-huh.
And they made him into this big, you know, hero of, you know, mm-hmm. like this kind of protagonist of this story where this misfit, you know, this poor
yeah.
outcast gets married and the whole town chips in and makes it so that he can have his dream wedding to,
mm-hmm.
and I found that really disgusting. I think that our media and especially our reality TV show producers should be ashamed.
Yeah.
Except for the ones who do Rock of Love.
I just feel like more and more reality TV is about giving attention to people who've made really poor decisions.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like,
you know, like, I've made this poor decision to have 8 babies, or
yeah.
I've made this poor decision to eat until I'm 1,200 pounds, or,
yeah.
you know.
And everybody says, you know, oh, well, you're blaming the victim, you're blaming the victim. And, you know, it's unfortunate that these people have been dealt some of the cards that they've
yeah.
been dealt. But at the same time, everybody has shitty cards in their deck, right? You know?
Yeah.
I don't
see why it has to be black and white. Like, you either blame the victim or you venerate them. It's
right.
like... You know, I understand that, you know, this guy that you were talking about, you know, he's got genetic factors
and
you know,
he was depressed and that's
yeah,
that
and
sucks.
I think that's valid. And I do think that a lot of obese people out there do genuinely suffer from disease and they do need to be, you know, they need assistance. They shouldn't just be like, well, it's your fault, fatty, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, yeah, I mean, when you enable somebody and you just, you know, you're like, oh, you poor thing, let
yeah.
me do everything for you. It's like,
yeah.
no, that's how they got in that position in the first place.
Right.
You need to give them the tools to get better instead of what you said, you know,
right.
just enabling them.
Right. And I mean, as for, you know, personal responsibility and everything too, I'm not the kind of person who says, you know, well, yeah, everybody starts off on an equal footing, so if anybody ends up, you know, worse off, it's their own fault. But
Ron
at the same time,
2008.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, there are some things over which we have control, and it seems like at the point where you hit 350, 400 pounds, that's a real watershed moment, or
mm-hmm.
should be for most people, where you say, okay, I'm, you know, at an unhealthy weight, and I can't think of anybody who would be at a healthy weight at 400 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe if you're, like, 7.5 feet tall, like, maybe a few people out there, but, I
or
mean...
Or if it's all muscle.
Right.
If it's 400 pounds of muscle.
Right.
Even I don't think that would be healthy.
Even
either.
That, yeah.
You die of a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly.
You die of roid rage. Which, okay... I almost hate to do this. Pranjal's gonna be so mad. A few weeks ago, I said something about roid rage, and he's like, I was joking about it. I was like, yeah, I have total roid rage, and he's like, oh, do you have hemorrhoids? He thought that's what the phrase roid rage meant. Like, you have hemorrhoids, and you're so angry that your butt hurts that you're like, you know, cranky. And I'm like, no, steroid, not hemorrhoid. So yeah.
Well, now what will people with hemorrhoids say when they become very angry about it?
That's called hem rage.
But then what will people who are hemorrhaging say?
They're hemorrhaging. That's what it is.
Right, okay. Okay. Can you insert like one of those like ba-dum ching?
Oh, sound? Totally. Okay. Thank done.
Thank you.
Oh, the other thing I was thinking about in terms of sound effects was using Josh's FBI voice from that one episode of Naked Vegan he did, where it was just like half the show was just him yelling, "Damn it!" in the background.
That would be a good one. Yeah, I think we should do that. I think we should also try and isolate. Remember when Mike was making that table and sawing?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good... When we don't have anything that interesting to say, we can just have that noise.
True.
Kind of come in and like...
Yeah, instead of crickets.
Right, right.
Oh, speaking of background noises, though, were you able to listen to the last episode at all?
I was, yes.
Okay. Do you remember that guy coming out of the deck and like practically shouting like, "What's up, my white Negro?"
You know, I didn't remember what he actually said. I just remember him yelling. And then I remember the other guy kind of listening in and asking questions during the recording. The other guys, I was just really trying to ignore them.
Oh, God. Yeah, I ended up cutting the last 10 minutes of the podcast because it was just them going, "Ha, ha, ha!" Like, literally, that's what his laugh sounded like.
Why did you cut that?
I don't know. I did keep the raw material, though, because it was just so good. I was like, I'm going to make, like, 10 songs out of this. But yeah, the white Negro line was where I was kind of like, whoa. I remember when that happened, and I just thought, oh my God, I hope the mic picked that up.
Oh, dear. So, speaking of last episode, in which we talked about unemployment, and in which we talked about your book, the Crap Jobs book, which was put out by The Idler.
Yes.
I bought a book this week called The Freedom Manifesto, which is by the editor of The Idler, the periodical. And it's awesome. It's an indictment of work ethic.
Showed me that book, and it looks really awesome.
Yeah, and I thought we could talk.
Buy my own copy.
Yeah, it's $4.
Sweet.
at Dog-Eared Books. But I really liked the idea of somebody finally taking a stand for all of us, you know, lazy slobs with no work ethic.
I think it's high time somebody condemned the work ethic, because it is a crock of shit.
It really is. I mean,
I suffer from the Protestant work ethic, too, and it's a bitch.
Me too. I feel like I have a music degree from the best music school in Canada, and I went to law school and did really well and got a good job that I didn't take when I got out, and I still feel like the biggest fuck-up in the entire world. Seriously, like, I feel like my parents must look at me and just feel absolute burning shame.
Yeah, so, but you've got, like... Well, on your mom's side, you've got 2 siblings to defer the blame, and then on your dad's side, you've got 4 siblings to defer the blame. So you've got some diffusion going on.
Yeah, but I'm the oldest.
You can unload some of that.
Yeah, but me and Jamie are. We're probably at a higher degree of deadbeatitude than you.
I don't know.
Actually, we're less qualified, I guess. Like, well, we're more qualified to be deadbeats. So you have, like, your degrees that should somehow insure you from being such a deadbeat as you are.
But they don't.
Does that make Jordan a greater deadbeat because she's got the degrees?
I think that just means she's an overachiever deadbeat.
See, but this is exactly what I'm talking about. You can, you know, you can be an intelligent person with, like, lots of education and who has had successes and triumphs in their life. And you can be a principled, good person who, you know, wants to live their life in a moral way. And still, there is something in our society that makes you feel like you are not doing enough ever. Like you should be working all the time and you should have lots of money in your 401k and you should be, you know, saving for your unborn children's college education and you should be like, you know, giving 20% to charity and blah, 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 blah. And the thing that I liked about this book is that it finally, like, and I don't know why I'd never more seriously questioned all of that bullshit before, but I really appreciated...
Well, you're not yet 30, so, you know, you've got a good start on questioning all that bullshit. You've got more than half your life ahead of you still.
That's true. I hope. I could die.
I could kill you.
You just jinxed me. I'm going to die on the way home.
I got a shiv waiting for you. I got a shiv with your name on it. Aww. Fresh fish.
Aww.
But, I'm just making a prison joke. Don't worry. I'm not going to shiv
Erica.
You. Prison
where's
Erica.
Where's your bandana?
It's but, horrible. They suck your soul out.
But I really liked how somebody finally said that that's bullshit. And I mean, it really is. It's this, like, capitalist kind of false consciousness thing that just is designed to try and make everybody work really hard so they make lots of money for the man. So,
right on.
I've decided to make a take a more principled approach towards slacking. And
I like that. I look forward to reading this book, actually.
Yeah.
And I look forward to discussing it at great length in our podcast.
Yes. The other point that we can talk about when we've both finished reading it is also that you can think better when you're not caught up in the, like,
true.
9 to 5 or increasingly, you know, 9 to 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Whatever. Grind, it says that, you know, your brain, when it has a little bit of space and time to kind of stretch out, it functions better and it thinks better. And that's why, you know, writers and musicians and stuff like that are all slackers.
I know I've had some pretty good ideas since I stopped working.
Yeah, me too. You know, I wish I had the gumption to implement them, but I guess that would require having a work ethic.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, I'm feeling more and more like that myself, where, and I think a lot of people our age are, especially with the economic crisis right now, where people are like, I worked my ass off, and I have fuck all to show for it.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're lucky, maybe you've got a mortgage that's going to put you in the poorhouse, if you're lucky, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Wait, why do I want to work my ass off and make this my life? I think a lot of people are realizing that, like...
Yeah.
There's more to life than this bullshit.
So. I know. Well, and people who are just so much happier now that they've quit their jobs or have been laid off or whatever. I think it's really telling. I mean, people worry about money, but aside from that worry, people are way happier. And it's not like people just want to sit at home and watch TV all day, but people are doing stuff. I mean, they're, like, going to Food Not Bombs, they're...
Well, it's like, when you're working, that's all you want to do, because you're drained when you come home, and
exactly.
It's, like, all you can do to just sit in front of a TV. I mean, I know that that's what I did all the time when I worked. I just came home and watched movies all the time, because all I wanted to do was escape.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's the same thing with me, though I still kind of feel like I'm recovering from law school a little bit. But that's pretty fair, because that was pretty intense bullshit. But it's amazing. Like, you have the energy and you have the time and you have the inclination finally to, you know,
totally.
Draw or read or, you know, play music or make crafts or whatever. And I think that that is much more interesting and worthwhile than, you know, being the data entry person at whatever big company or...
Oh, God. I'm going to go back to a life of data entry after this.
Yes, well,
yay.
Sadly, I need to get a job soon, or I will be living in the gutter.
I think money is really overrated, though. I mean, people...
You need a base amount to live, but, I mean,
yeah,
above
I mean,
that.
I think there's so many people that try to live above their means. I mean, it is the great American way, you know?
Right.
People have to buy a new car every 2 years, and, you know, they have to do certain things. But it's like, I don't know. I'm just kind of at that point where I own all the clothes I need to own. I'm just not interested by going shopping anymore.
No.
You know, I have my rent and my food, and that's about all I need money for.
Yeah. Well, beer.
that's included in food. That's my sustenance.
Yeah.
My life.
Yeah, I'm feeling that same way. Like I'm always really floored by how much money people feel like they need. You know, yeah. There are people who make, like I remember when I was coming out of law school and I got hired, to article at this one firm, and the salary that they offered me was in the mid 30,000.
Uh-huh.
And that was far and away more money than I had ever made in my entire life. And it was huge. And then I remember going back to school and hearing everybody at school bitching about how low the articling salaries were in Edmonton. And mine was like right in the middle. So so everybody was bitching about, you know, like $30,000 and $40,000 salaries.
When you're fresh out of college is pretty good.
It's not bad. I mean it's like law school, you've been there 7 years and you do have more debt. Unless you're actually a law student, in which case probably your parents, unless you were me, bought you a house and a car and paid your tuition.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because that's kind of how it works, unless you're me. But or my friend Mike. My friend Mike also didn't get bought anything. But his parents couldn't afford it, legitimately. Anyways. Anyways.
Looking at you, Dad.
But the thing that really floored me is just, like, how much money do you need? For me, $35,000 or, you know, around that amount is enough to pay my rent, to buy food, to, like, take a couple vacations a year, and to save some money. Like, that's a lot of money for me. And I guess it's the same thing. Like, I don't drive, so I don't need to have a car. But I guess, but even if I did, that's enough to lease something or whatever. And I'm not a big clothes horse. Like, I'll buy stuff occasionally if I can afford it, but I'm not that big on it. And, I guess rent and food and booze are really my big expenses right now.
And now that I have a lot more time, I really enjoy doing stuff myself that I would otherwise pay for.
Yeah, totally.
And I think a lot of people pay for stuff that they don't realize they could do themselves or learn how to do and actually have fun learning how to do it.
Yes, and like getting together with people and doing these things.
Yes.
It's a lot more fun, you know, you get together and you have a Skillshare or some kind of thing. I mean, if I were to buy clothes that didn't quite fit me, I feel like I could come over and you could help me.
Fat chance. Oh. Get out.
All right, well, fine. My other friends, my real friends with sewing machines and fashion degrees.
Of course you
You know, and there's been talk of, you know, maybe writing some wills or something like that.
Yes.
I can help people write their wills.
There's an Edmonton Skillshare Facebook group, but the funny thing about it is that virtually everyone is offering graphic design services. I need to find a way to harness all this graphic design knowledge.
Awesome.
You should get them to do it, and then you should copyright it all and sell it.
Yeah. How I Skillshared my way to success.
Hong Kong needs some good graphic designers. They've got, like, the worst ads in the entire world.
Really? Maybe Mike and I should go there, and he can be a hotshot graphic designer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can. Well, they get a twofer with you guys, because you can do the graphic design, and as native English speakers, you can
have
slogans that actually work.
That's true.
Yes.
English be gone.
Yes. Although, be warned, that was my short-lived venture out there, and it didn't go so well. Apparently, people don't give a shit about speaking poor English.
Well.
As long as their Mandarin is good, they don't give a shit about the English.
I see.
Because the, you know.
Wait a minute.
The American overlords are so 10 years ago. It's all about the mainland overlords now.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you hear about, this is just a little short thing, that German magazine that published, they had some issue about something to do with China. Probably like, you know, China's economic power rising or something like that. And they wanted some like pretty Chinese thing to put on the cover. And they ended up accidentally printing a handbill for a brothel because they had no idea what it said.
Oops.
And it's also in this magazine, but I remember reading it online before a long time ago. But yes, the Max Planck Institute, one of Germany's top scientific institutions, a special report on China. a handbill for a strip club. The text promises a burlesque acts by pretty as jade housewives with hot bodies for the daytime patron and recommends their enchanting and coquettish performance.
Well.
Yes. And apparently they had a German, like, Chinese expert look at this.
And
but
they
because
didn't...
Yeah, but because he's not a native speaker, I guess he kind of... I don't know if there was a double entendre in there, but he didn't catch that it was a brothel handbill.
Man. That's, yeah. Though, to be fair, that's pretty tame. I mean, the handbills yeah. that I imagine you would see coming out of, you know, the Hustler Club or the Lusty Lady yeah. would probably be a bit racier, I think.
My my friend in Hong Kong, we lived on this very small island, so it was a small community and a lot of people knew each other. And we were at a party and our landlord was there and, you know, our landlord's like this really cool, like chilled out guy. He, you know, you could never call him before 3 p.m. because he didn't wake up until then. And he owned a bar on the island and like he would give us free drinks there all the time. He's a really nice guy. But my friend leans over at this party and like loud enough, I'm pretty sure that our landlord could hear him. And he goes, "I saw him yesterday coming out of a brothel." And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, well, you should have leveraged that into some kind of yeah. deal on your rent and more cheap and free drinks.
Yeah. Well, considering you're paying about 300 US a month, that I think we were already getting a pretty good deal there.
Oh, man. We were walking around the Castro today and looking at for rent signs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we saw some 3 bedrooms for like $3,600, $3,700.
Yeah, wow. Okay, and I yeah. live in a 3 bedroom. I want to figure out, those are about
we can
12
look it up
times
online.
More rent than I pay.
12 times?
1, 2, 3, 4. Because... Well,
oh, then you yourself
Oh, yeah, then
pay.
I myself personally pay. Okay, it's right. 3 times what I pay.
Yes, Jessica nice. Has her own house with 2 roommates for $1,000 Canadian.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Like, including
and that's
the basement.
That's about 1,000 US, right? Is it?
It's
about...
a little cheaper now. Okay. The Canadian dollar kind of tanked and took a bunch of my savings with it.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen Harper, for keeping the Canadian
Jerk.
Economy strong.
Thanks, Jean Poutine.
Yeah, yeah, whatever, asshole.
Merci beaucoup.
But yeah, they have a full, like a nice, like darling little house with 3 bedrooms and like a full, like
basement.
Suite. Damn.
For yeah, $1,000.
And our landlord is like an 80-something-year-old farmer, who can hardly walk yet cultivates a gigantic garden. In
nice.
Our yard every year, and then his family comes and harvests, and there's
That's
like
so cute.
Yeah,
it is
crazy.
Cute. But Aww. Our grandma worries about him.
I worry about him too because I haven't
untoward.
Seen him for
no.
now.
She's
oh,
worried that he's gonna keel over and
oh,
die.
No.
Yeah, he was at one point insisting that he would shovel our walks, and he would do like an impeccable job.
Aww.
And, like he. Can't even walk without a walker.
Poor thing.
Sometimes we'd go out and help him, but then also we didn't do a good enough job for him.
Aww.
So, yeah.
That's craziness. So are you looking for a Castro street side apartment so you can flash during the Pride Parade?
Me? No.
Because that's all the rage. If
really?
You've got an apartment that looks out over Market or Castro... It's all about, you know, going up there and simulating sex acts or showing your penis or, as I saw once, two guys masturbating out of an open window. And, like, there's a crowd on Market Street just going, yeah, woo, yeah, you're jacking off,
Oh, I love this city.
Yep.
I can't wait for the Folsom Street Fair.
Yeah, I didn't get to go this year because I was working at No One Eight.
I heard. But I also heard reports back from this year's fair from both Mike, my husband, and also Becca, who said that she
oh, right.
saw one guy put his balls on another guy's head.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that.
There was, when we were driving to the music studio in the Tenderloin, we drove by this bar. It was like the Tea Club or something like that. And I was like, oh, the Tea Club, that sounds like a cute little, you know, and I was like looking at it as we drove by, and then as we get closer, it's like, all nude male review,
ah.
and I was like, Why would they call that place the Tea Club? And then I decided it's because you can go and get tea bagged. At least that's my theory.
That's a nice theory. We should go. We should record there live.
I'm getting tea bagged right now as we speak. Woo! The tea room, it rules. Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, on that note, tea bagging. We should probably sign it off. Say good night and farewell.
I bid my vocal cords to the listeners of the Cosmopolitan Hour to be mounted on a plaque so that they may always hear my golden voice even after I am gone.
I want them to take my hands and mount them in a strangling position on a plaque that they can then use to smite their enemies.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any final wishes, Jessica? What body part do you bequeath to the vegetarian and vegan movement?
I'm drawing a blank. I don't know. Backbone. With which to something, courage, something, walking stick, flexible.
I bequeath my foot to be lodged permanently up Ingrid Newkirk's ass.
There you can come up with any of those.
Actually, you know what? You know what? Ingrid Newkirk should have added to her will. I guess she still could. She should bequeath her ass to be used as a megaphone for all of PETA so that they may be recognized as talking out of Ingrid Newkirk's ass.
Yes. And I think on that note, that's the high note that we're going to have today. So thank you for listening, and thanks to Jessica for joining us all the way from Edmonton.
In Canada. Yes.
That Edmonton.
Yes. So good night and good luck.
Yes. And think about where you want your body parts to end up.
We've got the money because we know how to rap. Yeah, that's a fucking other one, and we don't fuck about. Levers, you mate, got shit on us, yeah? Pimping. You know that fucking, tell him, Joe, how the fuck it is, yeah? Levers, you, we can go and fuck that shit, yeah? Because we know how to do it. Turzo massive. You know that. Fuck. Peace.